who turned his steed around and headed for Dalkeith upon the sea to claim his wife, was the true namesake of the Sahak of yore, the Viking conqueror who had run ramshod over any who dared oppose him. I commit, I attain, I prevail. He leapt to his mount and spurred his charger into a full run. Seal and Jess, my sweet falcon, he promised with a dark smile. Beneath the bow of Rowan's, Adam stiffened. Not fair, not fair, get thee hence! But fair or not, he'd seen true. The hawk had turned around and was coming back to take Edrian away with him. That was simply unacceptable. He obviously had to do something drastic.
How could this be?
Lydia paced the kitchen, a flurry of claret-colored damask and concern.
I don't have any idea, Lydia. One minute I was in the gardens, and the next thing I knew I was in my bedroom, back in my own time.
Your own time,
Lydia echoed softly. Adrian met her gaze levelly.
Almost 500 years from now.
Lydia cocked her head and fell still, as if having a brisk internal debate with herself. The silence stretched into a protracted length of time while she pondered the limits of her beliefs. Lydia had always thought that women were more open-minded and adaptable than men, when it came to inexplicable happenings. Perhaps it was because women experienced firsthand the incomprehensible and astonishing miracle of childbirth. To a woman who could create life inside her own body, why, time travel seemed like a minor miracle in comparison. But men were always trying to find a rational explanation for things. When the hawk had told her what strange news Grimm had discovered at Comyn Keep, Lydia had studied Adrian closely, watching for any signs of instability or peculiar behavior. Through her close observation, she had only become more convinced that Adrian was just as sane as a person could be. She had concluded that while something had hurt Adrian deeply in the past, whatever had hurt her had far from weakened her mind. Adrian had been strengthened by it, like tempered steel. Oh, Lydia knew there was a very lonely young woman behind some of Adrian's caustic humor and sometimes cool facade. But Lydia had found that stern walls most often guarded a treasure, and a treasure her daughter-in-law was indeed. Lydia cared for her enormously and had every intention of having grandchildren from her son and this lovely young woman. The idea that the entire Comyn clan was suffering some strange madness didn't make sense. Lydia knew Althea Comyn well from time spent together at court, years past. She was a practical, worldly wise woman, and although over the years Althea had grown more reclusive, she still remained pragmatic and level-headed. Lydia had long suspected the Laird Comyn of acts of twisted violence. Could she believe he had killed his own daughter in an act of senseless violence? Easily. He'd had his youngest son slaughtered like a lamb to the sacrifice for crossing clan lines and taking up with one of the Bruce's grandnieces. Through all of the Red Comyn's acts of twisted and petty vengeances, Althea Comyn had managed the aftermath to the continued benefit of her clan. She was an extraordinary woman, holding her children and grandchildren together with sheer will and determination. And so to Lydia, the thought of the pragmatic Lady Comyn suffering a fit of fantasy was more difficult to believe than the possibility of time travel. Simply put, Althea Comyn was too much a cold realist to indulge in any nonsense. Having reached her conclusions, Lydia smiled gently at Adrian, who'd been waiting in tense silence.
Hawk told me what Lady Comyn said, Adrian, that you're not her daughter, that you appeared out of thin air. Indeed, I have heard your brogue ebb and flow like a stormy, unpredictable tide.
Adrian was momentarily chagrined.
You have?
Lydia snorted.
When you were ill, your burr disappeared entirely, my dear.
Adrian blinked.
Why didn't anybody ever ask me about it? In case you haven't noticed, things haven't been exactly calm since you've come to Dalkeith. Not a day has passed that hasn't brought new surprises. Murder attempts, unwelcome visitors, not to mention the hawk behaving like a besotted lad. Besides, I hoped that one day you would confide in me, of your own choosing. Now the guards tell me they watched you disappear and reappear several times before their very eyes.
Lydia rubbed her palms against the skirt of her dress, a far-off expression in her eyes.
From the future,
she murmured softly.
My son believed it was some trauma that made you believe such madness. And yet...
And yet what?
Adrian urged. Lydia met Adrian's clear, steady eyes. They stared at each other a long, searching moment. Finally, Lydia said,
Nay, not a hint of madness in that gaze.
I'm from another time, Lydia. I'm not mad.
I believe you, Adrian,
Lydia said simply.
You do?
Adrian practically yelped.
Why?
Does it really matter? Suffice it to say, I am convinced. And when things finally return to normal around here, if they ever do, I want you to tell me all about it. Your time. I have many questions, but they will wait. For now there are things we must be clear on.
Lydia's brow furrowed in thought.
How did you get here, Adrian?
I don't know,
Adrian shrugged helplessly.
Truly, I have no idea.
The hawk thought it was the Black Queen. The Lady Coleman said it was bewitched.
I thought it was, too.
So it never was the Black Queen. Adrian, we must be absolutely clear on this. Exactly what were you doing the moment when it happened?
The first time, when I wound up at the Coleman's keep, or this time?
This time,
Lydia said.
Although we should investigate the first time as well, and look for similarities.
Well, I was walking in the gardens, and I was thinking about the 20th century. I was thinking about how much
you wanted to leave,
Lydia finished for her, with a trace of bitterness. Adrian was equally surprised and touched.
No, actually, I was thinking about how nice it is here. In the 1990s, my God, Lydia, people were just out of control. Children killing parents. Parents killing children. Children killing children. They've all got cell phones stuck to their ears, and yet I've never seen such distance between people trying so hard to be close. And just the day before I left, you should have seen the headlines in the papers. A boy strangled a little girl when she wouldn't get off the phone and let him use it. Oh, I was thinking bitter thoughts of that time, and comparing it to home, and home was definitely winning.
See that again?
Lydia uttered softly.
What?
Adrian asked blankly.
Oh, headlines, papers, there.
She started to explain, but Lydia cut her off.
Home.
Lydia's face lit with a beautiful smile.
You called this home?
Adrian blinked.
I did?
The two women looked at each other a long moment.
Well, by the Samhain, Lydia, give her the coffee, I'll say.
Tavis's gruff voice came from the door.
Popping in and out like that. Surely she's got a thirst on.
Coffee?
Adrian perked.
Ah!
Lydia smiled, pleased with herself and doubly delighted with her daughter-in-law, who had called Dalkeith upon the sea home, without even realizing it. She quickly filled a porcelain mug with the steaming brew and placed it proudly on the table in front of her. Adrian's nose twitched as her taste buds kicked up a sprightly jig, and she reached greedily for the mug. She closed her eyes, breathed deeply, and drank. And choked. Tavis pounded her on the back and looked accusingly at Lydia.
I told you,
he said. When Adrian could breathe again, she wiped the tears from her eyes and peered suspiciously in her cup.
Oh, Lydia, you don't leave the coffee grounds. No, not grounds, quite. More like a paste, I think. What did you do, mush the beans and mix them with water?
Ugh! Didn't I tell you to run it through a sieve?
Tavis reminded.
Would you want to drink it like that?
Well, with all the hubbub, I forgot.
Lydia snatched the mug.
Since you're so certain you know how to do it, you do it.
She thrust the mug at Tavis, sloshing thick brown stuff on the floor.
Fine. See if I don't, Elsie.
With a supercilious look, he made off for the buttery. Lydia sighed.
Adrian, I know it hasn't been a very good morning so far. I so wanted to have coffee for you. But in lieu of coffee, how about a cup of tea and a chat?
Uh-oh,
Adrian said.
I know that look, Lydia. What's wrong? Besides my being tossed through time portals.
Tea?
Lydia evaded.
Talk,
Adrian said warily. How best to start this? Lydia was determined to hide nothing from her. Lies and half-truths had a nasty way of reproducing and breeding distrust. If Adrian could see the hawk clearly, the truth would hopefully not do damage. But lies, somewhere down the line, assuredly would.
Esmeralda is dead.
I'm so sorry,
Adrian offered instantly.
But who's Esmeralda?
The hawk's, well, ex-mistress probably explains it best.
You mean in addition to Olivia? And where was he keeping her, by the way, in the dungeon? The tower? The room next to mine?
Lydia winced.
It's not like that, Adrian. He'd ended it with her months before you came. She lived with the Rome who camp on our fields in the warm seasons. According to what her people told Davos this morning, she's the one who had been trying to kill you. The good news is, you're safe now.
Haven't I been saying it all along? I told you it was probably one of that man's ex-girlfriends, didn't I?
Oh! She leapt to her feet.
Adrian! What now?
Oh, bother, Lydia brooded.
Well, buck up,
she told herself, knowing from the look on Adrian's face that she was just spoiling for a good fight with the hawk, and that she would be mad as a spitting banshee when she realized she couldn't get one.
Hawk left for Ooster at dawn.
For how long?
Adrian gritted.
He didn't say. Adrian, wait! We need to sort out what brought you here!
But Adrian was no longer listening. Lydia sighed as Adrian stormed from the kitchen, mumbling non-stop under her breath.
Arrogant, pig-headed, pain-in-the-ass Neanderthal.
Chapter 23
Just what is your problem, Adrian de Simone?
She asked herself furiously. She shrugged and sighed before forlornly advising a nearby rosebush.
I seem to have a bit of a thing for the man.
The rosebush nodded sagely in the soft summer breeze, and Adrian willingly poured the whole of it upon her rapt audience.
I know. He's been with a lot of women. But he's not like Eberhard. Of course, probably there's nobody like Eberhard, except maybe a five-headed monster from the jaws of hell.
When the rosebush didn't accuse her of being melodramatic or waxing poetical, she summoned up a truly pitiful sigh and continued.
I can't understand a blasted thing about the man. First he wants me. I mean, come on, he burned my queen to keep me here, which didn't really work, apparently, but the intention was there. He saves my life repeatedly, even though it was kind of indirectly his fault I was in danger to begin with, and then he refuses to see me. And if that's not enough, he just up and leaves without so much as a fare thee well.
Adrian plucked irritably at the rosebush.
I don't think he quite understands the full necessity of clear and timely communication. Timely meaning now. Where exactly is Ooster, anyway?
She fully considered trying to find a horse and go there herself. How dare he just up and abandon her? Not that she minded entirely being where she was. Dalkeith upon the sea was certainly lovely. But what if she got zipped back to her own time for good and never saw him again? Damned if that didn't put things in an entirely different perspective. A few soldiers of the war raging within her breast got up and traitorously switched camp on the heels of that thought. How had she failed to realize that she could disappear and never see the man she was married to again? That she had no control over it whatsoever. 20 more soldiers marched over to the hawk's side of the fracas raging inside her. Holy cow.
Don't you wonder, Adrian? What it would feel like to lie down next to him in the sizzling heat of magnificent passion?
Okay, she had one soldier left on her side, and his name was Mr. Suspicious in Fearful.
Traitors!
She frowned at the hawk's new camp. Just thinking about him made her feel hot. She trailed her fingers in the fountain's sparkling, chemical-free water. She couldn't imagine never seeing this beautiful fountain again. Never smelling the lavender virgin air of 1513. No Lydia. No Tavis. No castle by the sea. No Laird Hawk, man of steel and blazing passion. Just Seattle, and bitter memories and fear keeping her inside her house. The 1990s, bargain packaged with smog and ozone holes. She doubted Hawk would ever try to send her on vacations alone. He seemed to be the kind of man who would treasure his wife and keep her close to his side if the woman allowed it, close to that beautifully muscled side, and under that kilt.
Dream, wicked dream, she sighed softly.
Adrian squeezed her eyes tightly shut and dropped her head in her hands. A long eternity of questions tumbled through her head, and slowly but surely, Adrian helped the last little soldier to his feet, dusted him off, and let him lean on her as she walked him over to the other side of the war. She had made her decision. She would try. She raised her head from her hands slowly to meet Adam's piercing gaze. How long had he been standing there, watching her with worship in his eyes? Dark eyes, black as hate. Now where had that come from?
You hate the Hawk, don't you, Adam?
She asked in a flash of crystal-clear intuition. He smiled appreciatively.
You women are like that, cut to the quick of it with a canny eye. But hate attaches a great deal of importance to its predicate, he mocked as he dropped himself beside her on the ledge.
Don't play word games with me, Adam. Answer my question.
This would please you? Honesty from a man?
Yes.
He shrugged a beautiful sun-kissed shoulder.
I hate the Hawk.
Why?
Adrian asked indignantly.
He's a fool. He fails to cede appropriate due to your beauty, beauty.
To my what?
The least important thing about her. The smithy flashed a blinding smile.
He seeks but to spread them, to slip between your thighs, but those love's slick dewy petals I would immortalize.
Adrian stiffened.
That's very poetic, but there's no need to be rude, Adam, and you don't even know me.
I can think of nothing I'd rather do with my time than spend it knowing you, in the biblical sense, since you find my other references too graphic. Is that pretty enough for you?
Who are you?
I can be anyone you want me to be.
But who are you?
She repeated stubbornly.
I am the man you've needed all your life. I can give you whatever you wish before you even realize you're wishing for it. I can fill your every longing, heal your every wound, right your every wrong. You have enemies? Not with me at your side. You have hunger? I will find the most succulent ripe morsel and feed you with my bare hands. You have pain? I will ease it. Bad dreams? I will chase them asunder. Regrets? I will go back and undo them. Command me, beauty, and I am yours.
Adrian shot him a withering look.
The only regrets I have are all centered around beautiful men. So I suggest you get yourself out of my...
You find me beautiful?
Something about this man's eyes was just not quite right.
Aesthetically speaking, she clarified.
As beautiful as the Hawk?
Adrian paused. She could be cutting at times, but when push came to shove, it was her nature to go out of her way not to hurt people's feelings. Adrian preferred to maintain her silence when her opinion was not the answer sought, and in this case, her silence was answer enough. Adam's jaw tightened.
As beautiful as the Hawk?
Men are different. You can't compare apples to oranges.
I'm not asking you to. I'm asking you to compare a man to a man. The Hawk and myself, he growled.
Adam, I am not getting into this with you. You're trying to force me to say something.
I am only requesting a fair answer.
Why is this so important to you? Why do you even care?
His mood changed. Quicksilver.
Give me a chance, beauty. You said, aesthetically, I please. You can't truly compare men until you've tasted the pleasure they can give you. Lie with me, beauty. Let me...
Stop it!
When you watched me forge the metal, it made you burn.
Adam's intense black eyes bored into hers, penetrating and deep. He claimed her hand and turned it palm up to his lips.
Yes, but that was before I saw...
She broke off quickly.
The Hawk!
Adam spit out bitterly.
Hawk, the magnificent! Hawk, the living legend! Hawk, the seductive bastard! Hawk, the king's whore! Remember?
She gazed sadly at him.
"Stop it, Adam," she finally said.
"Have you bedded him?"
"That's none of your business. And let go of my hand."
She tried to tug her hand out of his grasp, but his grip tightened, and as his fingers caressed her wrist, she felt confusion assail her senses.
"Answer me, beauty. Have you lain with the hawk?"
She swallowed tightly.
"I won't answer him,"
she vowed stubbornly, even as her lips murmured,
"No."
"Then the game still plays, beauty, and I have yet to win. Forget the hawk. Think of Adam,"
he crooned as he claimed her lips in a brutal kiss. Adrian seemed to sink deeper and deeper into a murky sea that made her want to curl up and pull into herself.
"Adam, say it, beauty. Cry for me."
Where was the hawk when she needed him?
"Hawk!"
she whispered against Adam's punishing mouth. Enraged, Adam forced her head back until she met his furious gaze. As Adrian watched, Adam's dark features seemed to shimmer strangely, changing. But that wasn't possible, she assured herself. Adam's dark eyes suddenly seemed to have the hawk's flecks of gold. Adam's lower lip suddenly curved in hawk's sensual invitation.
"Is this what I must do to have you, beauty?"
Adam asked bitterly. Adrian stared in horrified fascination. Adam's face was melting and redefining, and he looked more like her husband with every passing instant.
"Must I resort to such artifice? Is it the only way you'll have me?"
Adrian extended a shaking hand to touch his oddly morphing face.
"Adam! Stop it!"
"Does this make you burn, beauty? If I wear his face, his hands? For I will, if it does."
"You're dreaming," she told herself. "You've fallen asleep, and you're having a really, really bad nightmare, but it will pass."
Adam's hands were on her breasts, and fingers of icy fire shivered a column of exquisite sensation through her spine, but it was not pleasure. A dozen paces away, the hawk froze, mid-step after barreling up the long bridge to the gardens. Line by line, muscle by muscle, his face became a mask of fury and pain. How long had he been gone? A dozen hours? Half a day? The wound he'd taken while saving her life burned angrily in his hand as his desire for her throbbed angrily beneath his kilt. He forced himself to watch a long moment, to seal permanently upon his mind just what kind of fool he was to want this lass, to love her even as she betrayed him. The smithy's hard, bronzed body stretched the length of his wife's sultry curves as they lounged on the fountain's edge. His hands were twined in her silvery blonde mane, and his mouth was locked on his wife's yielding lips. Hawk watched as she whimpered, hands frantic against the smithy in her need. As she pulled at his hair, frantically clawed at his shoulders, grass and flowers ripped from the fragrant earth beneath his boot as Hawk turned away. Adrian struggled for her sanity.
"Go back to whatever hell from whence you came!"
The words took every ounce of energy she still possessed and left her gasping limply for air. The groping hands abruptly released her. She fell off the ledge and landed in the fountain with a splash. The cool water swept away the thick confusion instantly. She cringed in terror, waiting for the smithy's hand to reach in for her. But nothing happened.
"Ah, Adam!"
A breath of puckish wind teased her chilled nipples through the thin material of her gown.
"Oh!"
She covered them hastily with her palms.
Adam!"
she called a little stronger. No answer.
"Who are you, really?"
she yelled furiously into the empty morning. Chapter 24 In her desperation, Adrian considered not eating. She wondered if they had cigarettes in 1513, reconsidered, and decided to eat instead. Until she found the scotch. "About time," she mused, as she sat in his study and propped her feet on his desk. She poured a healthy dollop of the whiskey into a cut crystal tumbler and took a burning swallow.
"Ugh!"
she said to the desk thoughtfully.
"But they do brew a fine blend, dunna they?"
She spent the rest of the afternoon and evening in his sacred haven, hiding from the strange smithy's advances. Lydia's abiding concern, and her own heartache. She read his books as she watched the misty rain that started while she drained the tumbler of scotch. He had fine taste in books, she thought. She could fall in love with a man who liked to read. Later, when she rummaged through his desk, she told herself she had every right because she was his wife, after all. Letters to friends, from friends, to his mother while he'd been away, sat neatly ribboned in a box. Adrian picked through the drawers, finding miniatures of Hawk's sister and brother. She discovered boyhood treasures that warmed her heart. A leather ball with often repaired stitching, cunningly carved statues of animals, rocks, and trinkets. By her second glass of scotch, she was liking him entirely too much.
"Enough scotch, Adrian, and it's long past time to eat something."
On unsteady legs, she made her way to the great hall.
"Wife."
The voice held no warmth. Adrian flinched and gasped. She spun around and found herself face to face with the Hawk. But he'd gone to Ooster, hadn't he? Apparently not. Her heart soared. She was ready to try. But something in his gaze unnerved her, and she hadn't the foggiest notion why. She narrowed her eyes and peered at him intently.
"You look downright cantankerous," she said.
She emitted a squeak of fear when he lunged for her.
What are you doing, Hawk?"
His hands closed about her wrists with steely possession as he used his powerful body to force her back against the cool stone of the corridor.
"Hawk, what—"
"Silence, lass."
Wide-eyed, she stared into his face, searching for some clue that would explain the icy hostility in his eyes. He forced his muscular leg between her thighs, cruelly pushing them apart.
"You've been drinking, lass."
His breath was warm on her face. She could smell the potent stench of alcohol.
"So? So have you. And I thought you were an Ooster."
His beautiful lips contorted in a bitter smile.
I'm quite aware that you thought I was an Ooster, wife."
His brow grasped thickly, betraying the extent of his rage.
"Well, I don't see why you're so angry with me. You're the one who had 9 million mistresses, and you're the one who left without saying goodbye, and you're the one who wouldn't—"
"What's good for the gander is not necessarily good for the goose," he snarled.
He twined his hand in her hair and yanked her back sharply, baring the pale arch of her throat.
"Neither in spirit consumption nor in lovers, wife."
"What?"
He wasn't making any sense. Talking about farm animals when she was trying to have a reasonably sober conversation with him. She gasped when he bit her gently at the base of her neck, where her pulse pounded erratically. If she couldn't handle this man sober, she certainly couldn't handle him tipsy. With excruciating leisure, he traced his tongue down her neck and across the upper curves of her breasts. Her mouth went dry, and an entire flock of twittering birds took wing in her belly.
"You wanton,"
he breathed against her flawless skin. Adrian moaned softly, partly in pain from his words, and partly in pleasure from his touch.
"Faithless, cruel beauty. What did I do to deserve this?"
"What did I do?"
"No," he thundered. "No words. I will suffer no honeyed lies from that sweet snake slayer you call a mouth. Aye, lass, you have the most cruel of poisons. Better I had let the dart take you, or the arrow. I was a fool to suffer one moment of pain on your account."
"I'm dreaming again?"
she wondered. But she knew she wasn't, because never in a dream had she been so aware of every inch of her body, her traitorous body that begged to get closer to this angry man who dripped sex appeal, even in his fury.
"Tell me what he has to give you that I don't have. Tell me what you hunger for in that man, and after I've shown you every inch of what I have to give you, then you can tell me if you still think he has more than I."
"The smithy?"
she asked incredulously. He ignored her question completely.
"I should have done this long ago. You are my wife. You will share my bed. You will bear my children. And most assuredly, by the time I'm done with you, you will never say that word again. I told you the Hawk's rules once. Now I'm reminding you for the last time. Smithy and Adam are two words that you will never say to me. If you do, I will punish you so innovatively and cruelly that you'll wish you'd never been born."
The words were spoken with such white-hot, yet carefully controlled anger, that Adrian didn't even begin to question what punishment he might have in mind. She knew instinctively that she never wanted to find out. As she parted her lips to speak, Hawk rubbed his body against hers, intimately pressing his hard cock between her thighs. The words she'd planned to say were exhaled instead as a soft whoosh of air that tapered into a husky moan. Adrian wanted to melt against him, to arch herself into his body with complete abandon. She couldn't even stand next to the man without wanting him. His smile was mocking and cruel. "Does he feel like this, lass? Does he have this much to pleasure you with?" "No man has that," she thought feverishly, as her hips moved hungrily against him. Hawk growled softly, closing his mouth over hers in a ruthless, punishing kiss. Adrian felt his hand raising her skirt, and realized that in his current rage the hawk was going to take her, right here in the dim and chill hallway. Tipsy or not, this was not how Adrian planned to part with her hard-kept virginity. She wanted him, but not like this. Never like this.
"Stop! Hawk! Whatever you think I've done, I haven't!" she cried.
He silenced her with his mouth, his kiss hot, hungry and cruel. She understood he was punishing her with his body, not making love to her, but she couldn't resist his tongue and couldn't prevent herself from breathlessly kissing him back. Hawk dropped his head and grazed her neck with his teeth, then teased her hardened nipples through her gown. Adrian was so lost in pleasure that she didn't realize what he was doing until it was too late. She felt the rasp of a rope against her wrists as he yanked her arms down and spun her around, securing her hands at the base of her back.
"You son of a bitch!" she hissed.
"Son of a bitch," he repeated thoughtfully. "Now you don't like my mother?"
"I don't like you when you're like this. Hawk, why are you doing this? What have I done?"
"Silence, lass," he commanded softly. And she learned then that when his voice was soft and supple as oiled leather was when she was in the most extreme danger. It was the first of many lessons he would teach her. When the silken hood slid down over her face, she screamed her fury and lashed out against him with her feet. Struggling, kicking, raging in his arms, she cursed raggedly.
"Wife," he said right against her ear through the silk hood, "you belong to me. Soon you will not remember that there was ever a time when you didn't."
Adam stood amidst the shadow of the rowans and watched as the hawk stalked through the night, the hooded woman fighting his grasp. So he thought he could escape Adam Black, did he? Hawk thought he could take her away? Clever. Adam hadn't negotiated that point. Hawk had obviously decided to play cutting edge close to the letter of their law. The man was becoming downright infuriating. No, this was not what Adam had expected at all when he'd staged his scene in the gardens. So the man was more brute than he had thought. He had vastly underestimated his opponent. He'd thought the hawk was too decent and too nice to know when a man had to be as hard and unforgiving as steel with a woman. He'd counted on the noble hawk being so wounded by seeing her with the smithy that he'd curse her and swear her off, maybe divorce her, any of which, according to his plan, would send her scurrying to his blazing forge at the Rowans. He'd thought, quite mistakenly it seemed, that the hawk had at least one or two weaknesses of character.
"Silence, wife!"
The hawk's baritone resonated in the darkness. Adam shuddered. No mortal should have such a voice. Well, this just wouldn't do. He'd have to seriously intervene, because if such a man carried off a woman and kept her for a time, the woman would surely belong to him when he was through. And Adam never lost at anything. Certainly not this. He stepped forward from the shadows, prepared to confront the hawk, when he heard a harsh whisper behind him.
"Fool!"
"What now?"
Adam snarled, turning to face King Finvera.
"The queen demands your presence."
"Now?"
"Right now. She's on to us. I think it's that snoopy little on again. You'll have to leave this game at least long enough to allay the queen's suspicions. Come."
"I can't come now."
"You have no choice. She will come for you herself if you don't, and then we'll have no chance left at all."
Adam stood still a long moment, allowing his rage to burn through him and leave cinders of resolve in its wake. He had to be very careful where his queen was concerned. It would do him no good to bar her whim, or will in any manner. He allowed himself one long look over his shoulder at the retreating figure on horseback.
"Very well, my liege. Through this rotten hell, bar my will, pledge to none but the fairest queen. Lead on."
Chapter 25. She stopped screaming only when her voice gave out.
"Stupid," she told herself. "What did that accomplish? Nothing. You're trussed up like a chicken about to be plucked, and now you can't even peep a protest. Just take the hood off, Hawk," she begged in a gravelly whisper. "Please?"
"Rule number 9. My name from this moment forward is Shahawk. Shahawk, not Hawk. When you use it, you will be rewarded. When you don't, I will permit no quarter."
"Why do you want me to use that name?"
"So I know you understand who I really am. Not the legendary Hawk. The man. Shahawk James Lyon Douglas. Your husband."
"Who first called you Hawk?"
she asked hoarsely. He stifled a swift oath, and she felt his fingers at her throat.
"Who first called me Hawk doesn't make the difference. Everyone did. But 'twas all the king ever called me," he gritted. He didn't add that in all his life he had never given a lass leave to call him Shahawk. Not one.
He untied the hood and lifted it from her face, then poured cool water into her mouth, relieving some of the burning that made her voice so rough.
"Try not to scream any more tonight, lass. Your throat will bleed."
"King James used only that name?"
she asked swiftly. Another sigh.
"Yes."
"Why?"
She could feel his body tense behind her.
"Because he said I was his own captive Hawk. And it was true. He controlled me for 15 years, as surely as a falconer controls his bird."
"My God! What did he do to you?"
she whispered, horrified at the icy depths in his voice when he spoke of his service. The Hawk controlled by another? Incomprehensible. But if the threat of destruction of Dalkeith, his mother and his siblings, had been held over his head? The threat of killing the hundreds of his clanspeople? What would the noble Hawk have done to prevent that? The answer came easily. Her strong, wise, ethical husband would have done whatever he had to do. Any other man, the Hawk would have simply killed. But one couldn't kill the King of Scotland, not without having his clan's existence completely eradicated by the king's army. Same result. No choice. A sentence of 15 years, all because of a scorned and spoiled king.
"Can't you just accept me as I am now, lass? It's over. I'm free."
His voice was so low and resonant with anguish that she froze. His words threw her off balance. It was something she might have said herself if confronted with her past by someone she cared for. Her husband understood pain, and perhaps shame and, oh, surely regret. What right had she to judge and condemn a person for a dark past? If she were honest with herself, she would even point out that her past had been the result of her own naive mistakes, where his painful ordeal had been one he'd been forced to endure, to keep safe his clan and his family. She wanted to touch and heal the man who sat so stiffly away from her now, yet she was not quite sure how to begin. This much was clear. He hadn't been the king's whore, whatever that was, because he'd wanted to. That fact went a long way toward easing her mind. More than anything, she wanted to understand this fierce, proud man, to brush away the shadows in his beautiful dark eyes. She jerked swiftly when she felt silk graze her jaw.
"No, don't put the hood back on me, please."
Hawk ignored her protests, and she sighed as he retied the cords.
"Will you just tell me why?"
"Why what?"
"Why are you sealing me now?"
What had she done to provoke his anger?
"I stepped back, lass. I gave you what no other man would have given you. I allowed you the time to choose me of your own will. But it seems your will is wildly foolish and needs persuading. Choose me, you will. And when you do, there will be no other man's name on your lips, no other man's shaft between your thighs, no other man's face in your mind's eye."
"But..."
She wanted to know why her time had so suddenly run out. What had made him snap?
"No buts. No more words, lass, unless you would have me bind your mouth as well. From this time forward you see without the benefit of those beautiful, lying eyes. Perhaps I'm not a complete fool. Perhaps you might see true with your inner vision. Then again, perhaps not. But your first lesson is that what I look like has nothing to do with who I am. Who I might have had to be in the past has nothing to do with who I am. When you finally see me clearly, then, and only then, will you see with your eyes again. They arrived in Uster shortly after dawn. Pushing his horse hard through the night, Hawk turned a 2-day journey into less than one. He guided her into the laird's residence, past the gawking staff, up the stairs into the bedroom. Without a word, he cut the bonds on her wrists with a dagger, pushed her to the bed, locking the door behind him as he left. The instant Adrian's hands were free, she ripped off the silken hood. She'd been prepared to shred it into tiny silken tatters, but realized he'd probably just use something else if she destroyed it. Besides, she mused, she had no intention of fighting him. She had enough of a battle on her hands trying to face her own emotions, let him do what he felt he needed to do. It granted her more time to grow familiar with the new feelings inside her. Dear heaven, but he was angry with her. Just what he was angry about she wasn't certain, but her resolve was still true. In the face of his fury, her soldiers had not changed their minds. They all stood proudly on the Hawk's side, and she was with them to a man. He planned to seduce her callously, to open her inner vision to him. He didn't need to know that it had already been opened, and that she shamelessly anticipated every moment of the seducing. The Hawk walked slowly through the streets of Uster. It was nearly deserted at this late hour. Only those of courage, abject stupidity, or evil intent walked the streets late at night, when a heavy fog was roiling in. He wondered into which category he fell. Much had been begun this day, yet even more remained unfinished. He'd spent most of his morning going over the miller's books and talking with angry villagers who accused the man of substituting their grain. There was only one miller, so positioned by the king's men before Hawk had been released from his pledge of service. Being the only one, he had been able to exert absolute control over the villagers' grain and had, in collusion with the local bailiff, indeed been cheating on weights, substituting moldy meal for better grains, and turning a tidy profit 3 towns northerly. Hawk sighed. That had been only the first of a dozen problems demanding his attention. He would have to hold the courts for a fortnight to catch up on all that had gone wrong under his benign neglect, while he'd been off in service to James. But he had time to remedy the villagers' many ills, and remedy them he would. His people had been well pleased to have him back, and once again taking an interest in their needs. As of this day, 3 men in Uster now held miller's tools and miller's rights. The Hawk smiled. Competition would be good for his people. Tansy and Mint swirled out the door of an open establishment as he passed by. A woman beckoned from the doorway, clad only in a filmy bit of stained and tattered silk. The Hawk cocked an amused brow and smiled, but declined as he continued down the street. His eyes turned dark and bitter. He had more than he could handle waiting for him at home. Adrian sat up with a start when she heard the Hawk throw open the door to her chamber. She had been imagining the sweet seduction he had in store for her, and had to use all her composure to hide her excitement at his return.
"Oh, you're back,"
she drawled, hoping she had succeeded in masking her delight. He crossed the room in 2 awesome strides, took her in his arms, and frowned darkly down at her. He lowered his head inexorably toward her lips, and she turned her face away. Undeterred, he grazed her neck with his teeth until he reached the base where her traitorous pulse beat raggedly. Her breath caught in her throat as he nipped her and ran his tongue up the column of her neck. If his very nearness made her shiver, his kisses would be her complete undoing. His rough shadow beard chafed her skin when he tugged her head back and gently nipped the lobe of her ear. Adrian sighed her pleasure, then added a little squeal of protest, just to be convincing.
"You will forget the smithy, lass," he promised.
A swift yank of her hair forced her to meet his gaze.
"I had no intention of remembering him anyway. He's nothing more than a pushy, overbearing, liberty-taking scoundrel."
"Nice try, wife," Hawk said dryly.
"What do you mean, nice try? Why are you so obsessed with the smithy?"
Me? You're the one who's obsessed with the smithy.
He raised the hood toward her head.
You are so thick-headed you don't even see the truth when it's right in front of you.
Oh, but that's just the point, lass. I saw the truth clearly with my own eyes that day in the garden. Aye, too clearly. And the memory of it seethes in my mind, mocking me. I had just been wounded, saving your fickle life, but you had no care for that. Nay, you had other sweet plans in the making, and my absence only made it easier for you. Gone from your side for all of a few hours, and so quickly you lay beneath him on the fountain. My fountain! My wife!
So that was it, she mused. He'd returned and seen the smithy when he'd been doing those foggy, frightening things to her, when she'd been fighting him. He'd been standing there watching the smithy practically rape her, and in his mind, believed she was willing. He hadn't even thought to help her.
Perhaps I'm not the only one who can't see so clearly, she said scathingly. Perhaps there are two in this room who could benefit from a little inner vision.
What say you, lass? Hawks said softly. She would not dignify his stupidity with a response. A man had practically raped her, and in his jealousy, her husband had simply watched. The more she protested her innocence, the guiltier she would look, and the more she thought about it, the angrier it made her.
I merely suggest you find that inner eye yourself, husband, she said, just as softly.
Her quiet dignity gave him pause. No mewling or lying or groveling, no justifications. Could it be he had misunderstood what he had seen on the fountain? Perhaps, but he would erase her memories of the smithy. That he vowed. He smiled darkly and sealed her with the silken hood again. Yes, by the time he was finished, she would forget Adam Black even existed. That he knew he could do. He'd been trained for it, first by the gypsies and then by the Duchess of Cortland.
Sex is not merely a momentary pleasure, she'd instructed him. It is an art to be practiced with studied hand and discriminating taste. I am going to school you in this. The finest of forays into human scandal. You will be the best lover the land has ever known by the time I am done. Easily, for there is no question that you are the most beautiful.
And the lessons had begun. She'd been right. There had indeed been much he hadn't known. And she showed him this spot here, that curve there, this way of moving, a thousand positions, the subtle ways to use his body to bring many different kinds of pleasure. And finally, all the mind games that went with it. He learned well, committing this art to memory. And in time, his eager, boyish hunger was lost adrift in a meaningless sea of conquests and mistresses. Oh, he was the best, no question about it. He left the lasses begging for his attention. The legend of the hawk grew. Then one day, a woman whom Hawk had spurned repeatedly, Olivia Dumont, petitioned King James for his favors as if he were a piece of property to be granted. And like royal property, James had granted him, wielding the same threat of harm to Dalkeith should he disobey. How James had loved that, especially when he realized how much the hawk had been humiliated by it, and so the king had said,
"You will be whoever we want you to be, even if it's a thing so trivial as our whore, to please our favored ladies."
Other men were sent to battle. The hawk was sent to bed with Olivia. Doubly humiliating. Many men had envied the hawk, the lover of so many beautiful women. Still more men had hated the hawk for his prowess and virility, and for the legends the ladies wove about him. Eventually, James had grown tired of hearing the legends, sick of his ladies clamoring about the beautiful man. James had sent the hawk abroad on absurd and risky missions, to steal a crown jewel from Persia, to beguile a priceless objet d'art from an old heiress in Rome. Whatever odd treasure the greedy James had heard of, the hawk was sent to acquire by fair means or foul. The king's whore had been simply that, a man who did the king's dirty work, whatsoever his fickle liege wished at the time. Now his eyes returned to the lass standing in silence before him. She was so different from any he'd ever known. From the first day he'd seen her, he'd recognized that she was truly without artifice or coy subterfuge. Although she might have hidden depths, they were neither malicious nor self-serving, but had been born of suffering and loneliness, not of deceit. He'd recognized that she had a pure heart, as pure and real and full of possibility as his gypsy fields had been, and that it had already been given to a man who was undeserving, to the epitome of deceit and strange artifice, to Adam Black. By hook or crook or whatever fashion was necessary, he would woo and win her. He would make her see the error of her ways, that she'd given her heart to the wrong man. She was sealed both from him and to him, until she learned to see again with that pure heart which had recoiled into hiding. He would wake it, shake it up, and force it to come out and face the world again. And when she'd learned to see him for what he really was, then she could see him with her eyes again. Adrian stood stock still and uncertain. It was strange, knowing he was in the room, but not knowing where or what he was doing. He could be standing in front of her even now, his body nude and glistening in the oil lights. She imagined him lit by the soft glow of candles. She loved the fires and torchères of this century. What kind of romance could live and breathe beneath fluorescent lights of her own time? She regretted the hood, as it deprived her of seeing him, but decided that was for the best. If she could see him, that meant he could see her eyes, and they would surely betray her fascination, if not her willingness. She felt the whisper of a breeze. Was he to her left? No, her right. The first time is for erasing all your memories of another man. He was circling round her. Her heart thundered. With any other man, being unable to see would have felt threatening, but not with the hawk. For despite his fury, he had proven himself to be honorable to the core. She knew that although he'd sealed her, he had done so in an attempt to win her love and trust, not to dominate or subdue her. There is nothing threatening in the fact that he'd closed her eyes to him. He'd opened her heart with his silken hood. Her lack of vision heightened all her other senses to an exquisite state. When his hand caressed the column of her neck, she swallowed a sigh of pleasure. Hawk continued circling her, to her side, then to her back, and, in what seemed like an eternity later, around to her front. Her ears strained for clues, her body vibrated with tension, wondering, waiting. The second time will be for teaching. Teaching you how it feels to be loved by a man such as me. 'Tis a thing you'll never forget. His breath fanned the nape of her neck. His fingers picked up a fall of her hair. She could hear only ragged breathing. His or hers, she wasn't certain. She stiffened at the brush of his hand against the curve of her hip, feeling a wild jolt of electricity charge through her body. The third time will be for the jessing and leashing. I promise you that time will be the end of your resistance. He trailed his fingers down her neck, across her breasts from nipple to nipple, then down over her taut stomach. His light caress feathered between her legs and was gone, leaving behind an aching hunger. But the fourth time, the fourth time when I hear your sweet cries, that one's for me, lass, for the waiting and the hunger and the agony of wanting you, just for me. His hands were on her shoulders, sliding the silk of the gown over her skin, undoing tiny pearl buttons at the nape of her neck one by one with something that felt like teeth? Oh! His tongue flickered against the sensitive skin at the nape of her neck, then moved lower still. Oh, dear heavens, but the sensuous stroke of his tongue could be her complete undoing. The rough velvet of his tongue traced its way all the way down her spine, then lower still. She trembled. Her knees weak, she swayed in silence. Can't make a sound, she reminded herself. Not a good sound, anyway. Only protests. Just when she was certain she couldn't maintain her silence a second longer, he stepped back, and she felt a slow breeze in his wake. She turned, attempting to track him in the silence. The back of her gown was open, her skin damp from his kisses. She waited in mute anticipation. Where was he? There, she thought, as she suddenly felt him grasp the fabric of her dress. He tugged her gown and it fell to the floor in a rustle of silk. The chemise fell next, and then there was nothing but stockings, lace stays, and slippers. Hawk was grateful she was sealed, that she couldn't see the tremor in his hands as he slid to his knees and removed one stocking slowly, rolling it down inch by inch as he knelt before her. He trailed reverent kisses down her long, silky leg, From her supple thigh to the back of her knee to her trim ankle, he lavished her legs, first one, then the other, with hot kisses, making certain he didn't miss one delectable inch of the creamy flesh he'd been dying to taste. She made not a whimper, but he understood her game. Hating him as she did, she would surely not utter one sound of pleasure unless he could rip it from her throat. And to do that, he must keep a clear head. He must not lose control and start thinking about those shimmering curls at the sweet juncture of her thighs, only inches from his mouth, or the silken nub that nestled within, the very center of her passion. From his position at her feet, he reveled in every plane and curve of her perfect body. His eyes skimmed over her firm thighs, up her taut, slightly rounded belly, over her creamy breasts to the alabaster column of her neck, where it met the black silk hood. Adrian knew that if something didn't happen fast, her legs were simply going to buckle beneath her, and she would fall on his face. Not a bad idea, her mind offered. She was shocked, aghast. But maybe... She swayed forward slightly. Hawk groaned as her shimmering curls brushed his unshaven cheek. Kneeling at her feet, he squeezed his eyes shut to banish the vision, the need, unaware that his tongue wet his lip and his mouth demanded. Shaking, he growled and surged to his feet, and then his hands were on her body, and he knew he was in serious trouble. Where the hell had the hawk gone? He wondered as he tumbled her roughly back to the bed. Where was the Lothario, that legendary master of control who was going to tease her beyond endurance and shatter her defenses? Just where the hell had his will gone? What will, he wondered, for he was lost in a green field of innocence more sweet and lush than any he'd ever known. Adrian moaned when his body covered hers, pressing her down into the soft bed. He was every inch a hot, demanding man. Oh, heavenly, the woman within her purred. Take me, she wanted to cry. But not that easily. She wouldn't give in too quickly. In a swift motion, the hawk ripped the hood off her head and kissed her, burying his hands in her hair. He kissed her so deeply that she lost her breath and the last remnants of her fear. She'd kissed a few men before, more than a few. Timid kisses, passionate kisses, Eberhard kisses that had left her cold. A man didn't kiss like this unless he was very deeply in love. He loved her. The awareness trembled in her, just under the top layer of her skin, then seeped deeper, penetrating fully. How magnificent to know he loved her so much. No question about it. He was cradling her face with his strong hands as if she were the most precious thing in the universe. She opened her eyes and met his troubled gaze, trying to say with her silvery silence all that she really felt, because she couldn't say the words. She didn't know how. No practice. When he shifted her beneath him, and his hard arousal rode between her legs, she did it, made all that sound she'd sworn she wasn't going to, practically roared. So this was it. This was what made people go crazy with passion and longing and hunger. This was what Shakespeare had known at some time in his life to write Romeo and Juliet, to pen such sweet verses of love. This is what the hawk had meant by Valhalla. She arched up against him, the muscles deep within her on fire, burning for something, aching and empty. Ari, he breathed as he dropped his head to suckle one nipple into his mouth. He kissed and tugged and tortured it. He released the tightened crest and blew cool air on the heated tip, nipped it lightly, then rubbed his rough shadow beard gently across it. A flash of fire erupted in her, radiating outward from her breasts and flooding her entire body with waves of desire. He scattered kisses lower, trailing across her stomach, the curve of her hips, her thighs. When he paused, directly above her honeyed heat, his mere breath fanning her sensitive skin was sheer torture. A heartbeat turned into a dozen, and she waited, frozen, for his next caress. When it came, she whimpered softly. He dropped kisses on the satiny insides of her legs, then tasted the very center of her hunger. When his tongue flickered out, stroking her tiny, taut nub repeatedly, she cried out and her body quivered against him. She felt herself reaching, soaring for something